Hear, hear with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
One in three women in the UK has undergone a termination of pregnancy. 20% of all babies are never born, yet 76% of the adult population support a woman's right to choose. Hello, my name's Sean Dilley, and this is undoubtedly going to be one of the most emotive, one of the most sensitive editions of the Hear Hear show to date.
You will never see an abortion filmed on television. You will never see that screened on a screen. It is still the taboo subject that we don't talk about.
Hear Hear with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
Well, we recognise, of course, that this is an incredibly sensitive topic. So if you have been affected or are affected by any of the issues raised in today's programme, we'll have a number you can call later. We'll hear in a little while an excerpt from Nadine Dorries' adjournment debate, speaking in the Commons. She's the Mid-Bedfordshire MP and would favour a system where there is more education before an abortion is permitted. In the meantime, the guest of the week this week with me in studio, Abigail Fitzgibbon, who is the Public Policy Manager from BPAS, the British Pregnancy Advisory Service. Could you tell us a little bit about the BPAS or the BPAS?
Sure. BPAS is a national sexual health charity that provides abortion contraception care. We see about 60,000 women a year with unplanned pregnancies.
So it's about education as well as anything else?
We have included within our remit education, partly education in terms of going into schools, but also in terms of educating policymakers and the public and the media about why women need access to abortion care.
Might sound a remedial question, this, but what is your position on abortion?
BPAS is a pro-choice organisation, so we believe that when a woman finds herself in a situation where she is pregnant and doesn't know what she wants to do about it, she should have the choice to either continue it, end it, or have the baby adopted.
How far does choice extend in your worldview? Is there sort of a duty, do you think, should there be a duty on clinicians or people who are counselling yourselves possibly and saying, well, have you considered whether this really is the best option or have you explored other options?
Our view is that, and certainly our practice, is that everything we do should be led by the woman. So some women, for example, will, you know, have an unplanned pregnancy and think there is absolutely no way I want to continue with this. Will come to us, will say that, and we certainly don't think it's our job to harangue her about
No, there's a difference, of course, between haranguing and saying, look, have you considered the other options? Because
yeah.
I would suggest if somebody finds themselves in a position where they're even coming to you, the emotional state they are in, there are no words to describe. So it's sensitive, obviously.
I mean, certainly that is true for some women. Some women are very ambivalent, are in a very difficult position and don't know what to do for the best. But I think we should be clear that although abortion is a really complicated ethical issue and it is very emotive, for some women it's quite a straightforward decision. That doesn't mean that it's easy, but they don't necessarily all need lots and lots of support to decide what they're going to do. But then, as you say, you know, for some women they really do need that extra support and they should and must get it.
We have in the UK at the moment just a little shy of 200,000 abortions a year. Now, what's BPAS's opinion of that number?
Essentially, the number is almost irrelevant. What is really important is that we're all doing everything we can to help women avoid becoming pregnant if they don't want to be.
But are we offering that support if someone has got pregnant to say, look, there is an option that you have, there is an alternative, you know, you don't have to make a rushed decision?
Absolutely. You know, women coming to BPAS can take the time that they need. Obviously, pregnancy is a time-limited condition to be in, and there is a time limit on abortions in this country, so you can't wait indefinitely.
Well, let's run over those time limits, and we'll get into more of the you know, discussion around time limits afterwards. But the law in the UK, can you just run over when people can and can't have abortions?
Sure. You can get an abortion with two doctors' signatures up to 24 weeks in this country. By far, most abortions take place under 10 weeks and most of those are under 9. What we're talking about is a minority of women presenting over 12 weeks gestation, with a tiny proportion, just under 2%, presenting over 20 weeks.
That's right. Towards the 24-week period, we're looking at maybe 1.6%, aren't we, according to the figures. But if a child has got a disability that would render them severely handicapped, I believe that's the wording of the legislation, be terminated effectively just before birth?
Effectively, that's what the legislation allows. In reality, what happens is, I think the legislation has to allow doctors and women to make these decisions in what are, to be completely honest, the most compelling, heartbreaking cases that any abortion provider will see, because these are usually wanted pregnancies.
Of course.
These are, which is a completely different situation. These are usually pregnancies that parents are desperate for, and then they get a diagnosis at what is a later gestation because of when scans take place, and then have to, along with their doctor and perhaps a fetal medicine specialist, make a decision about what to do about that pregnancy. And I think those decisions are best left in the hands of doctors
and
women.
Well, see, the thing is, I have to represent the opinions of some of our disabled listeners who have made the point, for instance, if a child is born without eyes or, you know, without certain body parts and all the rest of it, there are plenty of people who go on and do decently in life. And the notion of saying because it is disabled, that there's a feeling that it's almost eugenics.
Yeah, I think anyone could completely understand why a disabled person might feel like that. But these decisions are not made with any intention to make a judgment on the value of disabled people or other disabled people. They are very much made when a couple discusses their own circumstances in their own life and how they feel they could support that child. I don't think they are in any way meant to be reflective of how that couple feel about disabled people in general.
Do you think disabled people should have a voice here? Because essentially, you know, many people find it incredibly offensive, the idea that there's one rule for babies without a known disability and another for those with.
I think, as I've said, abortion is a really complicated ethical issue and everyone is entitled to an opinion on it, whatever aspect of the law you're talking about. So, I think it's very sad that disabled people would feel like that about this part of the law, but I do think that it is right and it needs to remain as it is.
Well, on that issue, of course, we have a channel here on Audio Boo. It's called Have I Got Booze For You? Your comments on this particular issue would be appreciated. Do you believe that Abigail Fitzgibbon's view from the British Pregnancy Advisory Service is the one that we need to look down? Or, you know, do you think maybe you still feel angry about the notion that life, at least on the face of it, is being treated slightly differently? In the meantime, let's take a listen. Audio Boo's own Dolores William, producer of this fine programme here, has been out speaking to people on the streets, asking them what they think about terminations in the UK.
If a girl goes through with something like that, if it happens the first time, you know, maybe it's a legitimate kind of accident or whatever, but if it happens more than once, I think it's not right. And there's a lot of people out there that also have been trying for kids. For when you get people that can have kids and then just abort, I think it's a real shame.
Near to where I live, there is a clinic and there are often people outside protesting, and I have approached them on several occasions. I find it really offensive. They always have very emotive imagery and they always give out these leaflets of what the fetus looks like when it's happening. Often people will say, oh, but the woman who had the abortion felt very guilty about it. That is often true, but that's usually because of the social stigma attached to it. Often it's the best decision, because the woman's life will change beyond all recognition. And that's what they don't really appreciate, the people that are campaigning. You know, they're not going to be there when in 10 years' time when the woman is struggling.
Women should have choice, but to some extent. For me, it's important if a woman was somehow abused.
Below a certain time, when the embryo isn't viable outside the mother, it's the mother's decision. If doctors have, you know, religious reasons for not performing abortions, obviously that has to be taken into account. And that the women should know the risks of abortion, of course, which are, you know, substantial.
Hear, hear, with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo. Sign up for your free account now.
And Abigail Fitzgibbon is still with us in studio from the British Pregnancy Advisory Service. An interesting cross-section of opinion, broadly supportive of the 76% who are pro-choice in this country, but illustrative of the fact people are still a bit uncomfortable when it comes to discussing termination.
Yeah, I think, as you've said, abortion is a very, very common procedure that takes place in this country. One in three women will go through it in her lifetime. But I think what is very unusual for something that is so common is how much women, and indeed men, cannot talk about it, because it is so heavily stigmatised. Chances are everybody knows someone, a woman who's had an abortion.
They may not know they know someone who's had an abortion.
Precisely, which I think is often very challenging for us, and that's why we feel that we have to speak out on behalf of the women that we see, because they feel that they can't speak out about their experience themselves.
Is there a lower age limit on those who are eligible to have abortions in the UK?
No.
Okay, so effectively that might be one of the reasons, if, because girls are getting pregnant younger and younger. If you had a 9 or a 10 year old pregnant, maybe that'd be one of the circumstances, I suppose.
I mean, if you had a 9 or a 10 year, I mean, thankfully BPAS has never seen a child that young, but in those kind of cases, certainly at very young ages, what you're looking at are child protection issues and other things that come into play as well.
That might be a particularly young age, but you do have underage girls rather a lot coming to you for advice and services.
We do. Actually, I think media reporting around younger teenagers presenting for abortion suggests that these are at kind of epidemic levels, and they're just not really.
Oh, no. I mean, I grant that. I mean, I think if you look at any tabloid reporting, you know, it would be exaggerated as a problem. But I suppose what I'm trying to do is, if anybody's listening and they're affected, you do deal with underage girls who become pregnant.
I'm with you, absolutely. And in this country, there are no laws around parental consent or information, so you can, providing you are deemed competent by the medical professional that sees you, seek care independently.
This is why it gets conflated by tabloid press, because many parents listening would be outraged that they could have maybe a 12, 13 year old daughter who has an abortion without them ever knowing.
Absolutely, and I think that everybody would understand why that would be a horrible position for a parent to be in, but the law is designed to protect the most vulnerable young women who cannot, for very good reasons, tell a parent that they are in that situation, because they may be in abusive.
And it's really hard, I guess, because of course we generally, the law doesn't recognise under 16s as being competent to consent for sexual intercourse.
Yes, in legal terms that does seem very odd, but I think what we have to do with our young people is, in the same way that if two 15-year-olds are having sex, they wouldn't be prosecuted.
No.
I don't think there's any point in pretending that if the female 15-year-old gets pregnant, it will then help to inform her parents or ban her from having an abortion. I think you almost have to deal with the reality of these situations when they occur.
Very, very difficult balance, I suppose, to get right. You remember, of course, the Mid-Bedfordshire MP Nadine Dorries was speaking in an adjournment debate quite some time ago, but within this parliament. And she has some various views on how she would like to see current laws reformed. And for context, we should say that Nadine Dorries was, of course, a nurse herself. Let's take a listen in.
It occurs to me, when examining the legislative abortion procedure of European countries, with far lower abortion numbers than ours, those countries in which informed consent before an abortion takes place is enshrined in law, that is Germany, France, Belgium, Finland and others, the abortion rate is much lower. And I have deliberately excluded countries with religious influence and cultural influence, such as Italy and Spain and Portugal, from that analysis. Also, it appears to me, by looking at that procedure, that it is a far kinder one. It is one which takes much more of account of the vulnerable position a woman may be in at the time of her request for an abortion, and provides her with alternatives to consider and a cooling down time in order to think and breathe and take stock of what is happening. All of these countries with good informed consent legislation had significantly lower than average daily abortion rates than those countries which do not have informed consent legislation. Although a causal link is impossible to prove, these figures suggest that informed consent legislation may be a good way of reducing Britain's abortion figures, and I think everybody in this House has agreed that we want to see that happen. In this country, if a woman requests a termination from her GP, there are no questions asked. And I have spoken to numerous GPs about this and posed the question, when a woman sits in your surgery and asks for a termination, what do you say? And the answer I get back frequently is, I don't say anything, I write a referral letter. A referral is then made to a hospital or clinic, and the abortion, for the woman's sake, is performed as quickly and as possible and without fuss. No counselling is provided in NHS hospitals and in some clinics. Minimal counselling is provided by PPAS, British Pregnancy Advisory Service clinics, who carry out a large number of abortions on behalf of the NHS. However, BPAS carry out the counselling, but they also carry out the abortion. So there is a clear conflict of interest there.
Hear, hear, with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
Well, Nadine Dorries, as I say, is a former NHS nurse. I think her knowledge of the system is probably about as good as it gets. What say you, Abigail Fitzgibbon, from the British Pregnancy Advisory Service, to her charge that you are conflicted when it comes to the fact that you're advising women, yet you're also carrying out abortions for the NHS?
I don't know about Nadine's experience as a nurse. As far as I understand, she has no experience in abortion care, and she certainly has none in the care that is provided at BPAS. BPAS is a charity. It is a not-for-profit healthcare provider staffed by nurses, doctors and counsellors. The idea that our staff are profiting from the patients they see by forcing them to have abortions that they do not want to have is ludicrous and offensive. And I think that we are all very grateful that this issue seems to have been put to bed by the government and we've moved on from it, because I think people didn't really believe that it was true, but it did gain a bit of traction for a time.
I suppose the conflict, the perception of conflict comes, notwithstanding the support, and I think the unambiguous support from government, actually, it has to be said, for BPAS, is that some of your funding comes from performing abortions.
96% of the work that we carry out is funded by the NHS. So we are effectively an NHS provider. So I think what was hard for us to understand with the various allegations that Nadine makes about us is why she doesn't view other healthcare providers to have a conflict of interest, indeed even staff within the NHS. Because obviously every expert, every doctor, every nurse who speaks to a patient about what will happen, and informed consent is obviously is part of the abortion
care pathway. You think we've got the informed consent that she's calling for or not?
We absolutely have informed consent. What's very hard to understand about Nadine's call for informed consent is A, that we already have it. B, if what she really means is informed consent whereby you give a woman information, advice and medical information about her choices, why she imagines that would definitely bring down the abortion rate is very hard to understand, because obviously the decision should still remain with the woman.
Now, the Abortion Act of 1967, and abortions, as I say, once again, we'll look a little bit at the Irish situation in a moment, legal in Wales and England and in Scotland. But the Abortion Act 1967 kind of says that the woman has to suffer some physical or mental harm in order to have the abortion. Certainly one of the points that Nadine Dorries alleges there is that GPs, quote unquote, frequently will just sign a referral without looking into whether there really is, you know, an effect on that woman's health.
Well, forcing a woman to continue a pregnancy against her will, I think most doctors would argue, is never going to be good for her health. It is safer to have an abortion at any gestation than it is to continue a pregnancy to term and go through labour.
Once again, onto the emotive terms, at what point would you regard a life to be ended?
Different women and indeed men feel differently about this issue, and what our legislation does is allow people to follow their consciences. So some women might not feel they can have an abortion after 8 weeks, some might not feel they can have one after 16 weeks. You know, these are personal things, they're matters of opinion. And I think what our law does very effectively is allow people to make their own decisions about it.
OK, do stay with us. We'll be back in a short while with Abigail Fitzgibbon from the British Pregnancy Advisory Service. She'll be back with us in a couple of moments. Let's bring in, however, Bernie Smith, who is the founder and director of Precious Life in Northern Ireland, actually worked closely with the Pro-Life Alliance. Bernie, obviously you've heard some just a little bit of what Abigail was saying a few moments ago. She'll be back with us later. I wonder whether you could give us your view on maybe the notion of choice versus responsibility.
Well, I have listened to the tail end of that interview, and it does really concern me that we have someone there is promoting something that is certainly not safe for the unborn child. And we have evidence that state very clearly that abortion is not safe for women as well. So,
talk to me over that evidence, because you know, many people listen to that. That sounds quite emotive. Start giving me some facts so that we can kind of get our teeth into them.
Well, I mean, the debate that is happening in Ireland. Ireland at this stage has very clearly, we've had the best evidence presented to our government in the south of Ireland. And in fact, Professor Casey, who presented very clear evidence recently on a review of maternal deaths spanning over 60 years in Ireland, clearly showed there was no recorded case of a woman taking her life. So it demonstrates in that study that suicide in pregnancy is very rare. So if we're looking at the mental health issue here, yes, many women may be depressed because they're pregnant, but to say that their life is in danger is absolutely ridiculous. And I mean, recently David Alton presented a very accurate data that showed that in the last 45 years, out of 7 million abortions, only 143 were performed to save the mother's life because her mother, the life was at risk. So we
Bernie
have to take
Smith,
that
do you
into
oppose all abortions?
Absolutely, because evidence is showing that there is no medical necessity. If a woman has psychological problems, if she's depressed in pregnancy, we must ensure that there is support there for her, even if that's psychiatric treatment. If a woman feels, she's suicidal, obviously, for in the best interest of that woman's health. Even in some cases, she would have to be sectioned to save her life. But destroying a life of an unborn child certainly is not in the best interest of a mother. In physical cases, no woman will ever be prevented from accessing medical treatment that will protect her life. Then that medical treatment doesn't involve the direct act of violence towards her baby. In fact, in many cases, women whose life, physical life has been in danger will go on maybe to deliver the baby prematurely or be able to continue with the pregnancy with the best maternal health care. In fact, the World Health Organization states very clearly that Ireland, north and south, is the safest place for a mother to be pregnant. And I can tell you another study that has recently been released from the Journal of the American Physicians and Surgeons has shown that Northern Ireland and the south of Ireland is the safest place for a mother to be pregnant. In fact,
what if someone's raped?
In the case of rape, well, we're talking about circumstances here. We're talking about rape.
We are talking circumstances, but it is a circumstance because if a woman's raped and they get pregnant as a result of the person who has raped them...
it doesn't change the reality. It doesn't change the reality that the child is a child in the womb. But what we have to ensure in those very rare cases, and in fact, they are very rare, but I don't think killing her unborn child in any way would unrape her. In fact, it would actually add to the already...
Sure, but you would say it's killing her unborn child if it's in the first couple of weeks, as opposed to,
well,
you know,
no,
when we're talking cellular construction effectively rather than
hearts. Well, we're
talking
about scientific evidence shows that there's no difference in the child conceived at the moment of conception than the child that's born, than the toddler, than the adult. We are all part of the human family. Scientific evidence shows us that. So, I mean, I think your last caller clearly doesn't understand science, good science, that it clearly outlines an unborn child as a child in the moment of conception.
No, I do get the argument you're putting forward,
for
but I do think, just breathe for a second, because what I would say to you is I think many people can understand the notion that from a pro-life perspective, it's an incredibly frowned upon thing to do, obviously. But what I'm trying to get at with you is almost from that moment of conception, you're saying that there's no going back. If someone says, I have been raped, I really need your advice, what advice are you going to give them?
Yeah. And I will be there for that woman, as I have been with many women who have been in very difficult circumstances. And again, rape is a circumstance. It doesn't change the nature of the conception. And we have to ensure that those women are cared for.
Nature of the conception, no disrespect to yourself, but many people might find that offensive because the nature of the conception of a couple making love to the notion of someone being forced upon by
absolutely.
A rapist. The nature of that conception is different.
It doesn't undo the actual assault on the mother, but abortion in itself is an assault on a mother. So women who have carried on with their pregnancies have never regretted giving birth to their babies. A study that was carried out in America on 37 rape victims showed the majority of those women who were cared for, who were loved and supported through the pregnancy, went on to give their babies. Some of them gave their babies up for adoption. They got over the rape. Those who had the abortions never got over the abortion, and they were unable to deal with the rape because they brushed it below the carpet and they ended up suffering the double whammy of the rape and the abortion. It's okay for you and I to sit there and think it's good for a woman to have an abortion. How horrible to be raped. And I can think like that as well. And I'm the mother of
teenage
daughters.
Talk to us about your statistical background. I mean, where do you get your statistics from?
Well,
I appreciate there's a multitude
are
of them.
Available. You can research these statistics. I've been to America. I've been to conferences in the UK, in Westminster. These are accurate statistics that are freely available for everyone. They're studies that are presented in government. And again, come back to the 67 Abortion Act, and we talk about the case of rape. It's so rare. 98% of abortions are performed clearly for social reasons. We have now over 93% of disabled unborn babies aborted. So let's look at the rape
And where
case.
Are those,
so
where
we,
are those statistics
abortion,
from? I'm not saying you need all your
just
statistics.
Just for rape cases,
but,
Sean, what we would have would be a very, very low statistic there.
Just before you dash, I'd like to speak to you, if I can, about the idea of time limits, because I totally recognise what you're saying, and I think, you know, in such an important debate, there needs to be respect on in every single viewpoint. I think it's absolutely vital if we're to do a proper job in making sure people are properly informed. But obviously, if you're saying that, you know, from the moment of conception, abortion effectively is murder, how do you then engage on the debate of, and it's only roughly 1.6% of people have late term abortions, but how do you engage on that debate? Because lots of the talk of the emotive side of things, such as simulated fetuses being sent in the post by the more extreme campaigners on the topic. How do you really participate in that debate and say, well, look, rather than having late term, have it early? You would just obviously effectively not be at that table of debate, I suppose.
Ireland at this stage, Northern Ireland particularly, which is part of the UK,
sure.
We have to look at the figures there that show very clearly that women are safer without abortion. We protect an unborn child, we protect that mother. So I think the UK at this stage and this debate has to look to Northern Ireland. How do we treat our weakest members in society? How do we deal with crisis pregnancies? Yeah, we have a number of women who travel to England every year. I think it's time that this debate was opened up scientifically and medically and legally. In fact, if you look at the 1967 Abortion Act, it was introduced to deal with very serious risks to the health of the mother. We're not dealing with it.
Yeah, I grant you, the practical use of the legislation, what you say is absolutely accurate, and I think this is where so many people are uncomfortable with a totally free and easy attitude towards it, is the idea of the serious health, yet obviously we're looking around about 200,000 abortions in the UK mainland each and every year. So I understand what you're saying, but what's the solution?
Well, 45 years later, we can see medical evidence is very clear that there's no medical necessity. Women are not dying because they can't access abortion. I think we need to go back to basics. We need to look at re-educating our population. We need to introduce better social care, crisis pregnancy support for women in the UK and Northern Ireland and further
afield. Not the British Pregnancy Advisory Service?
Abortion is not the answer. Absolutely not. The British pregnancy abortion industry earns countless millions at the expense of destroying women's lives and destroying innocent unborn children. So absolutely not. Anyone with a vested interest in this issue should not be part of it. There's many good crisis pregnancy organisations in the UK who are there working voluntary because they genuinely care for mothers and babies.
Can I ask lastly, Bernie Smith, just because of where we are on time, do you approach this from a religious point of view, do you think?
Greatest human rights battle of our day, and I think history will show us in days gone by when many people had to stand up for what was right. It's never right to destroy the life of an unborn child.
Hear, hear, with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
Well, thank you very much there to Bernie Smith, the founder and director of Precious Life. She had a lot to say for herself. I'm joined also in studio by the guest of the week for here, Abigail Fitzgibbon from the British Pregnancy Advisory Service. She doesn't like you much, does she?
No, she doesn't. But, to be fair to Bernie, I think, she's very passionate about this issue. She is...
That comes through. She says what she thinks.
And she is very honest in a way that not every anti-abortion campaigner is, that she believes that life starts at conception and that no woman should ever have an abortion. And actually, that's quite refreshing for pro-choice campaigners, because what we increasingly see are anti-abortion campaigns dressed up as being informed consent campaigns or campaigns around the time limit, when actually what these campaigners really want is for no woman to have an abortion ever.
That was interesting, because every interview I've ever done in my journalistic career, you're quite right, we get into discussions about the time limits and the like. And that's obviously something else again. But Bernie's just saying, even if someone's raped, that they need to go through with the pregnancy.
I mean, obviously, I completely disagree with her. I think to put a woman already in a desperate situation into a really quite abhorrent situation is profoundly cruel. But I guess for me and for BPAS, again, the decision has to be the woman's.
I do a little test whenever I'm doing a show on any topic or I'm just discussing a political matter, being a political journalist. And I talk to people on a bus, I know it sounds ridiculous, or the train, and I ask them questions without saying what I do for a job. And there was a fellow I was speaking to out in Hertfordshire this morning. What he had said to me, and he was a builder, your average man on the street. He was saying that, he's not entirely comfortable with the notion of saying that you should never have an abortion. He thinks there are many circumstances where it's possible. But the view that this chap, Bob, his name was actually Bob the Builder, literally, which made me laugh a little bit. But on the serious point, he says that there's kind of a mid ground between no terminations ever and where we currently are, which is where, effectively an abortion is as simple as saying I would like an abortion.
I don't think it is quite that simple, but I think what we can all agree is that we don't want women to become pregnant if they don't want to be. People want to be able to have sex with people that they don't necessarily want to have a child with. People fail to use it. Sometimes it fails to work. People are going to want to be free, not necessarily promiscuous, but, 50% of the women that have abortions are already mothers. I mean, these are people who are becoming pregnant with a long-term partner and yet still do not want to have another child.
If people have issues they want to discuss, whether it be contraception, pregnancy, or they're affected by the issue of termination abortions, how do they get in contact with the British Pregnancy Advisory Service?
If you go to our website, bpass.org, there's contact details on there and we can call you back or you can call us, whatever you need. But obviously, unplanned pregnancy has three options. So we will discuss all of those. But most women still, although you can self-refer in some areas, most women still go to their GP as their first port of call.
Yeah, there are a couple of self-referral techniques, aren't there? There's one where you can go to a family planning clinic or where they can go to an organisation like your own.
Yeah, what we can do at our contact centre, regardless of whether we can treat you or whether we can help you, because it depends on whether there's a contract in your area with the local NHS, what we can do is tell you how you can access care for free when, if you give us your postcode.
As I said at the very start of Hear Hear this week, it has been an incredibly emotive, incredibly emotional, hard topic to discuss. And of course, if you want to get involved, you can drop us a tweet at Hear Hear Show or leave a comment in the Have I Got Booze For You channel. Big thank you both to Bernie Smith from Precious Life, a pro-life campaigner, and also from the British Pregnancy and Advisory Service. Our guest of the week is Abigail Fitzgibbon. Thank you very much for joining us. This has been the Hear Hear Show. My name's been Sean Dilley. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter, like us, tell your friends about us. We'll be back next week with a special Hear Hear Show on gun control.
Hear Hear with Sean Dilley on Audioboo.